The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on March 30th, 2025. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good to see you on this kind of a slick day out there. Glad to see you anyway. This morning, I thought I'd kind of follow up on, 2 weeks ago, I'd given a class, it ended 2 weeks ago, on knowing and not knowing. It's something that we're a bit confused about. We don't realize that we're confused so easily anyway. Sometimes we realize we're a bit confused about this or that, about what we thought we knew, and we come to the realization that maybe not, or something here I didn't know. But getting a little deeper than that, just what knowing is and not knowing. And we have stories, koans, things in Zen where we talk about knowing and not knowing. We talk about don't know mind and various things like this. And it can get a little confusing. So I had a course on that. And we got down to what the Buddha had to say about this. And the Buddha spoke of that there's two kinds of knowledge. There's knowing accordingly, and then what he called penetration, getting into very deep penetrating knowledge of, well, the nature of reality, what is taking place here. And so we looked at that. It was a 4-week class, and then the last two classes mainly on those two kinds of knowledge. Though they spilled over into all lectures, all 4 lectures, talked about that a little bit in each. And it came to a pretty sturdy conclusion, I think. But I didn't say everything that I wanted to say in that class. So there was still another issue left over. And I thought I would take that up here this morning. I think I can do it in a way that doesn't require that you heard the first part of the class or the class itself. But I want to get back to this bit about really, truly, deeply seeing what the enlightened see, what they realize about this, what it is that they know, or what it is that we know, what it is that we can know. Because as I said, and as we explored in that class, we're very confused about this. Basically, because what we tend to think we know isn't really knowledge, not according to the awakened. It's what the Buddha called knowing accordingly. It's a kind of knowledge, I suppose you could say. It's knowledge like, you know, I know I'm in a room, or I know I'm facing some people here and on Zoom, and we call this knowledge. But this knowing accordingly, the Buddha pointed, it's not really deep, full understanding of reality, what is taking place here. And so there is this other knowledge, well, that's true knowledge, actually. And a simple way of speaking of these two that the Buddha didn't opt for at the time, I guess, but this knowing accordingly, this is according to our thoughts, our ideas. Well, the Buddha did speak of it this way. But this is conceptual knowledge. Again, this is what we ordinarily take to be true knowledge. And that leads to all kinds of difficulties for us, as we explored in the class. And I'll probably touch on a bit here. But this other kind of knowledge is, we can look at it this way. This is our perceptual knowledge. Now, we're very confused about perception and conception in our everyday parlance as well. Often we speak of perception as, how I would speak of conception, or I think how the awakened would speak of that as well. This is what we think. This is what we imagine. This is what we believe. This is what we have constructed ideas about. And this is, Wang Po, it was Wang Po, put it very well. I've given this to you many times. Where he said that the awakened, they let go of that. They let go of what they think, what we believe. And by the way, belief, really, if you get right down to it, is what we think is true or real. And if we really believe that, we really think that, this is what belief is. But again, it's conceptual. It's graspable. It's arguable. We can argue with each other about this kind of knowledge, this kind of idea. We have a hard time separating knowledge and belief when we're caught up with just these, the section here of knowing accordingly. But this is the conceptual. And this is where most of us are completely, unless we wake up to the actual perceptual experience of just this. And this is true knowledge here. And so Wang Po, he says, the wise, the awakened, they don't hang on to what they think. They let that drop away. They let that go. It might be useful here and there, so maybe we can use it a little bit here and there. It's very useful in many ways. It's very harmful, too, in many ways. But so they'll hang on to that a bit. But the wise, they don't really hang on to it, but they might use it. But they let go of this. They let go of what they think, not what they see. And there he's speaking of direct perceptual experience that we all have. We all see. We all hear. We all feel. We all think. And in just the raw thinking itself, this is a part of the perceptual, but this is the content of the thinking that becomes conceptual. And then we have trouble. This is why Dogen, in his Fukan Zazenge, he says, think not thinking. This is the essential art of Zazen. And we get confused by that. What do you mean, think not thinking? Well, he's really kind of pointing to the perceptual there. We're always with that, never separated from that. But we're oblivious to it, generally. Unless we wake up to this direct knowledge of reality, we're pretty much oblivious to it. And this is what I took you through in far more detail than this in that class. But there was more I wanted to say. And I talked about the last class was on this penetration, this deep knowledge on the perceptual a bit. But there was something else I wanted to cover in that class that I didn't have time for in the end. I tend to go on sometimes, I guess, and don't get as far as I want in the talks I give. But this was important enough, I thought, that I really should say something on this. And I have talked on this before. It's when the Buddha pointed out, this is very much related to what I've just brought up now and what we looked at in that course. It's what I would have ended on, what I was planning to end that course on. The Buddha pointed out that there is the unborn, the ungrown, and the unconditioned. Were there not the unborn, the ungrown, the unconditioned, there would be no escape for the born, the grown, and the conditioned. They didn't say and, but the conditioned. It's all together there at once. So there's the unborn, ungrown, unconditioned. Were this not the case, there would be no term that's was in the translation I have is escape. Maybe escape isn't quite the right word. Maybe something like release or relief for the born, the grown, the conditioned. And of course, that's where we are when we see ourselves as half of that perceptual experience. Conceptual apparatus takes over, and that's from the functioning of consciousness. And it divides it immediately, maybe not quite immediately, I want to look at that too, into these two. There's all of that out there, the objective world out there, separate and apart from me, and then me on this side of it, the subjective. And this occurs convincingly and to the point where it takes over and drowns out the pure perceptual experience, which doesn't divide the world in this way or any way whatsoever. And we tend to be oblivious to this. We don't know it. It is so subtle, quiet. We don't notice it. We don't realize that this is what is actually taking place in immediate direct experience of reality, of truth. And to the extent that we don't realize this, this is what awakening is to wake up to this. It isn't something you're missing now. This is always with us, the perceptual experience. But it's so quiet. And it doesn't dangle a bunch of baubles and bangles in front of us that catch our eye and our thoughts and our feelings, our emotions, and one thing or another. And just take us away. But it's quietly there, always. And we're caught with that. And then with this, we have these deep aches and heartaches and disturbances and fears and worries. Also, you know, things that we're eager to participate in and get all excited about. And we get some joy from that. But then that goes away. We're in this very uncertain and unstable place. And then we reach for, well, the stuff we see there, the stuff that we think up, ideas, beliefs, take hold of this, to give us some, meaning or something that will settle us and calm us down, lay our fears. Because with this, too, being caught up in this way, there isn't any answer. Yeah, we might believe, oh, yes, there is an answer. And you could say, well, this is the answer here, this book or this belief, this person or something is the answer, is the way. Just believe it. Just take hold of that. But this is never the case. I think of, that just really gets ultimately some release or relief from that. Because this is all going on in the last year sometime. I don't know when it was, when the talk I gave. I talked about the noisy box. This is the noisy box, and we're completely caught up with this. And we don't notice that there. Then I called it the not noisy box. I don't know what I call it. But it's not at all like the noisy box. But that would be the perceptual I was hinting at there. But we're always searching here in this area. And we want to know. We want to know what is going on here. What can finally relieve this uncertainty I have? This, I don't know what to do with it. I've tried different things in the course of my life. And worked hard for this or that. But in the end, I think of, it comes back to me, this is years ago when Walter Cronkite was the evening news on CBS Evening News. And in one of his newscasts there, he ended on this little story of this man. He's an older gentleman. He wasn't real old. He was, could have been maybe in his 50s. But he had been bumped around by life quite a bit. And he was a drunkard. And I don't know whoever found this and filmed this, but I had a mini interview with the man. And there he was in the gutter. It was dark. It was at night. It was raining. It was just pathetic. No, a place no one would want to be. And there he was. But he also was a human being. And he had deeper thoughts. And he just sat there, I don't know, on the curb or whatever, in the rain, in the dark, maybe it was kind of chilly, whatever. And what I remember him saying was, I don't know the answer. I don't understand this. I don't know. I don't know. It was just sort of that. What's it all about? It makes no sense. And that's a memory that's kind of haunted me ever since. We could easily just walk past a man like that and figure, oh, he's just down and out, and what does he know? But he's a human being. I don't know how well educated he was, or if he was much at all, or that didn't really come through, but he had. You run into many uneducated people, and yet they think, they have deep thoughts, they ponder things, and they don't know the answer. Like any of us, they might find their escapes. Sometimes they have some success with that, sometimes not. They go with this belief or whatever. We've developed as human beings, you know, different schools of thought and philosophy, religion, and also science, looking for the answer that will, you know, solve this for us and put us at ease. Yeah, we take on this belief, and you say, well, you know, and you find brothers and sisters who will gather around you and believe the same thing. But for each of us, if you just look at your mind, look at where it is. You can see. You might need to look at it a while. You have to really look. You can't don't look away. Just stay with it. You might be like that man in the gutter who came to this place where sort of at the end of his rope, and I just don't know. I don't understand. I want relief from this. And he didn't know where to turn or what to do with this. But all of this is in this realm of knowing accordingly. That we have ideas, we have beliefs, we look to something, we form some ideas, some idea of what to do, what career to take up, what, you know, what bar to go to, whatever. But and many things going on there. What religion to take up, what belief, what can I buy, what rings true enough for me that I can kind of stick with it. Or I don't want to be bothered anyways. I've got my home life here to take care of, and that's enough for me. I got my garden, you know, and yeah, and that's fine. It's beautiful. But in the backdrop of the mind, if we just go there and look, you can see this uncertainty is there. And it seems to be kind of universal. Well, then we have the whole movement of existentialism, which seems to come out of this, and of course, what is it, the other one, that developed from that. I've been blanking. But we end up with this myth of Sisyphus, where he's condemned to just push this big boulder up a hill. You all know the story. But it's sort of like the only escape is, well, you have to believe that Sisyphus is happy. Pushing up this boulder that rolls down, he pushes it back up for eternity. So is this really the human condition? Must it really be this way? And the Buddha said, there is the unborn, ungrown, unconditioned. Were there not the unborn, the ungrown, the unconditioned, there'd be no escape for the born, the grown, the conditioned. This is what he's talking about. And I can tell you, it's worthless me just telling you this, but I can assure you that the Buddha wasn't, once again, like everybody else and other, you know, different kinds of religions or things like that. I've got the truth here. This is it. You know. What the Buddha was saying is not like that, because he doesn't give you anything. Or Nagarjuna, who deeply understood what the Buddha was pointing out. He clarified that in many ways, helps us to really get through the clutter of our own mind and look directly, deeply at the actual experience of this moment. And with this, as long as you don't put something there now, a belief, read this passage every day of your life and it'll save you and all. Drop everything or follow the science. I pursued science as a younger person. And yeah, science can answer many things, but it just keeps pressing deeper. There are more questions. You can get to that. Well, that seems pretty fundamental. Even one of the things that really seem fundamental, like time and space, well, they've just recently, well, I haven't pulled those apart from each other, but time, space-time itself isn't fundamental. Just something else that it's made of. And the further we go, no matter how we pursue it, whether it's through our believing this or following, you know, that creed or whatever, or exploring the physical world here as science does, keep coming to more questions. You know. And they're looking for, the scientists would follow, like, well, why would this be? We just discovered this, why would that be? And so we get some idea about that. We form a hypothesis and then they test it. This is a very good way to work your way through this this world defined by knowing accordingly. According to this, and they're looking for the thing according to what that it was. But there they want to get to like a theory of everything. They're sort of giving up on, I don't hear that term so much anymore. But it's the same sort of thing. Looking for that something that will give me a foundation here. But the Buddha, all he said was, there's the unborn, the ungrown, the unconditioned. And I'm telling you, this is radically different from anything else that's going on in the realm of the born, the grown, and the conditioned, where we are. We are of that. We're born, grow, we're conditioned in various ways, along with everything else that we know and grasp and think and form hypotheses about and beliefs and theories and whatever. It's all over there in that noisy box in the knowing accordingly area. So what's the Buddha talking about then? And I said, is it like anything else? If somebody might come along and say, yeah, we got the truth here. This is it. Just believe this. Well, that's the problem. If you can believe it, that's part of the born, the grown, the condition. There's something there that's just entered your life now, an idea, a thought, whatever, and it's formed in some way. It's a concept or a belief, something, or even a thing, you know, just, you know, the holy grapefruit, I don't know, that you just bow down to this, you know, we'll do it with anything, looking for something. And we can think the Buddha's just doing the same thing.
Well, there's the unborn, the ungrown.
Yeah, of course, those are just words. But he's pointing to something, he can't even speak of it. Nagarjuna, too. I've taken, some of you were around when I was teaching those classes, and he takes us through quite a bit, and it's in it, oh, wow, this is so deep, so heavy. Actually, it's not. We're deep. We're heavy in our thinking and all of this. And we approach it like we would approach anything else, just like we might approach when the Buddha said there's the unborn, the unborn. Yeah, well, and we could do that with Nagarjuna until we get to a point, and some of the students, we get to this point where they want to know, well, what's his point? What's he getting at? What is he going to give us in the end? What's his philosophical stance here? What argument is he going to make that will just end all arguments? And Nagarjuna doesn't do that. And the Buddha didn't do it. He just pointed out that there is just of course, there's even problems with pointing out that there is the unborn, the unborn. Just the word is a problem. Or naming it unborn, ungrown. Or even referring to it. Language can't get us to the place where we wake up. Whatever you think, as my teacher said, whatever you think is delusion. Yeah, if you believe it, thinking itself, you know, it's when we believe it, when we think it's true, it's real. This is delusion. The enlightened see delusion. They don't see some magical thing here. They see exactly what we see here. Maybe, maybe not. We can argue about that. Do we all see the same thing? Does red to you look like red looks to me? And we're endless with this stuff. That's the other thing. We're over here in this noisy place. There's no end to it. The discussions and the arguments and the fighting. The Buddha and Nagarjuna and others, Dogen, Wangpo, Baijiang, who said, if you realize that there's no connection between your senses and an outside world, you'd be enlightened on the spot. These guys are pointing to something else than just another idea, another belief, another concept. Do not take any of the writings of the awakened and use them in that way where you think they're going to lay something out there for you to grasp and understand as if that's going to do it for you. That's what keeps us in suffering. And the way out of this confusion is to realize just what that is. That is delusion. That is confusion. So what then about this unborn, ungrown condition? If I can't think about it, you can't say it. Well, as I mentioned, though, it is perceptual experience. If I were to speak of it more conceptually, I would say it is your conceptual experience. That would make you more comfortable if I could say it that way. And I can, I'm sure. But now I've really polluted it by doing that. It is pure perceptual experience. There's no your in that. There's no object there that is an experience of. But language forces us to talk that way. Even so, we have brilliant masters like the Buddha early on, and then what Nagarjuna did and others as well, Dogen, who found ways to write and to speak and ways of pointing. Always telling us, though, don't grasp what I'm saying or what I... Because they're pointing to something that if we form it as an idea, a concept, well, there we are. We're right back to where we've always been, and we don't realize what they're trying to help us with. There's nothing more I can say. What can I say? What do I think I say? But I'm trying to impart to you how pervasive and how deep this runs, the human problem here, and how difficult it is to see our way out of it. But it all has to do with, notice your grasping mind. Something I've pointed out many times, probably isn't too easy to see what I'm pointing at there, because again, we'll grasp. Quite naturally, we'll say, what do you mean you're grasping mind? And then we want to know more. Well, immediately we resort to, I want to get an idea of this. I don't quite understand. That's fine in the conceptual realm. It's functional and useful in many ways, as I've often said. But what Buddha Dharma, what the awakened are trying to help us with here, is to realize that there's something, it's not that. Unborn, ungrown, unconditioned. Yeah, let's drop the words now. It's just something, except it's not a thing. Okay, so how do I wake up to this? We could ask. Now, of course, I'm back in the polluted world of speaking. So realize the different things I'll be saying will have all kinds of places where you can grasp and hang on and ask questions about. But just try to follow what's being pointed out. Or, I don't know, follow. Just look. But watch your own mind. Watch the grasping that's going on in your mind, the trying to figure out, trying to get to the bottom of things. Just keep watching this. This is what you can do. This is what we need to do. Just look. Just see. Pick seeing because it's, for most of us, we think, well, that's our major sense. If I had to lose any one of my senses, that would be the last one I'd want to lose. That's where most of us are. Hearing is also very important. But when I say see, I don't mean with your eyes. It's just realize. It doesn't have to come through a visual thing or an audio thing, but just get very quiet and then just continue to look. Or a question comes up in your mind. Just continue to look at it. Immediately we'll try to figure out what's the answer to that. And well, in a practical way, if you're, I don't know, working with something in the house there and maybe you need to think about it and come up with some kind of solution, yeah, that's fine for all of that. But when it comes to this matter of, like that poor drunk in the gutter, what is this? What's this all about? I don't know. And we can think, yeah, we're all there. We don't know, nobody knows. That isn't the case. This true knowing, this what Buddha called penetration, is available to us. It's not we're already partaking of it. That's what's so beautiful about this, is that there's really even nothing you need to do. It's just to notice and not say anything. To notice without applying ideas to it or thinking about, oh, I could use it. I don't know what you would use it for. We say it's useless. And then well, that discourages people, so we don't want to say that too often. You can't use it for anything. But it will allay the suffering that is there and then the fear and all the stuff that goes with it that poor man in the gutter was voicing there. There is, as the poorly worded words of the Buddha were, there is escape for the born, the grown, the conditioned. But it isn't in continuing in our normal way of getting that or whatever, and grasping, taking hold of, or seeing myself, and I need to just look. It isn't don't push those things away if this is your feeling and your thought and your thinking and this is where you, but just look at it. Just stay tuned in. This is our meditation. To just sit quiet. This is Shikan Taza. Sometimes it's referred to just simply as just sitting. Just sitting. In my book, Buddhism is not what you think. Well, that's what I was alluding to there in the title. It's not about what you think. Buddhism. The real word is Buddha Dharma, but the publisher. Anyway, never mind. But in there, I have a chapter. I believe it's in that book. I titled it "Knowing Before You." Knowing Before You Think. I believe that's the title of the chapter. But that's about this too. That's also, I'm referring to Shikantaza there. That's the meditation we do. Shikantaza. Well, if we can find this, well, if it can find you, it can find you if you stop doing anything. Sit there like Yako-san, another story I tell, who's just sitting there. The teacher said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm not doing anything." "So you're sitting idly." "No, if I was sitting idly, I'd be doing something." All over the place, in subtle ways, the teachings are pointing to past teachers, awakened teachers, who, in one subtle way or another, are pointing to something here. Just take these things in, but don't do very much with them. Don't think about them. But at some point, you might just see what is actually taking place here before there's a you formed here that's grasping. Oh, yes, and there's other, I'm going on a little long, I better stop, but there was one more point. Actually, it came to me yesterday, I guess it was. Sometimes I go on YouTube or something like that, and I follow some of these discussions and things about consciousness and stuff like that, and just kind of see where... where people are with this. And when I was doing that, I saw another little thing, so I clicked on that a bit, and it was about something, I thought that that's what this was, and it was, but it was about something that I'd read about years ago now, probably 2-3 decades ago, I don't know. And it's about, and you've probably heard of this thing, that we don't really live in the present. Hooking up monitors or electrodes to your brain or whatever and that sort of thing, that we actually, our readout of the world is just a fraction of a second, but a substantial fraction of a second behind the actual experience. And so what we're, in other words, we don't live in the present moment, exactly. The present moment, no, but what we're reading is the present moment is already in the past by the time we're getting a readout on it. And I remember when I read about this years ago, and I thought, well, of course. But it just, when I heard about it again, when I tuned in, I realized that actually you could look at it this way, which didn't cross my mind before, but yeah, the actual perceptual experience. But then there's this little delay, and then we conceptualize it. And we do that so fast, all the time, we don't realize that anything like this is being done. But so we're kind of looking at a TV monitor or something like that of life as it's unfolding, rather than really taking in the actual experience. And according to this, they said that there's no way that we can, but that's not the case. In the case of the way of the awakened, this is where they are. They're right there with, they can see what the perceptual is, and then there's the constructed thing that comes right behind it. And I just thought, oh, that's interesting. I thought I might mention this today, but it's sort of like in that gap. You can actually see that. And what's going on, you can see the construction of the world and of yourself and everything. But of course, that's going on moment by moment, what appears to be moment by moment. And then, of course, then there's also the appearance of time, which now, as I mentioned before, that scientists have kind of uncovered now, there doesn't even seem to be time exactly as a thing. Or space. Yeah. But this is because the actual immediate direct experience of the world, of just this, doesn't supply us with stuff, including me. There's just this unborn, this ungrown, this unconditioned. It is your perceptual, I'd say your, but it's perceptual experience. Just settle the mind, quiet it down. It isn't like evil or bad that you grasp things or form ideas. We need that. That's very functional and useful to us human beings. And the animals, too. There's a lot I could say about that as well. So that there's nothing wrong with any of that. But if we don't understand what's taking place there, then we can really understand and realize how the man in the gutter got to where he is. Because he doesn't see that that's a constructed thing there, that that isn't really the way. And that world, that constructed world, no matter how it's constructed for you or for any of us, doesn't make sense. What's it all about? You're not going to find the answer. That's not what that is. In seeing the perceptual and realizing this distinction between that and the conceptual, or the two truths, there's truth absolute and then there's the relative truth. There's many ways that this, our teachings point to this. And there's, I've talked to Buddhist scholars today who feel like, well, we can dispense with certain ideas like the two truths. And like, yeah, because they don't understand it. Wake up and maybe you'll see this. And you wouldn't throw that out. My goodness, that, I mean, that's a teaching that's getting to be about as direct to the point as you could possibly be and still be saying something. You know, so this is a subtle, subtle thing. This is what the awakened realize, and this is not something you need to figure out. It's not something you need to work your way toward or anything. It's just a matter of watching just this. We can take some time in the day. Often we're just too busy with things. We have our jobs and we have this and that. But to regularly come back and take some time and just sit down, knowing before you think, the shikantaza, just sit there. Like Yaka-san, you're not doing anything. You know, so you're sitting, well, if I was sitting idly, I'd be doing something. Just, and we can do this. And the knowledge that is that is unlike our conceptual knowledge in every possible way that can, you know, that all of that can bring us to terror and disturbance and longing and loathing and all of this. There's something else here. Well, whatever I say now, the words won't cut it. Words can't reach it. But it is direct experience. That's what this practice is about. That's what the awakened are pointing to. And that's kind of the point I wanted to end that class on when I was talking about that class on knowing and not knowing. Okay, well, I've gone way beyond here. I'm supposed to end in a half an hour, but there's no way I would have tacked that on to my last hour in that class. So anyway, but thank you for letting me speak of it here. Any questions, though? Or comments?
I just wonder, do you believe there's something that knowledge that leads to how we perceive things that helps us?
We don't perceive things. That's kind of what I was saying. And also, I don't believe anything. I don't live according to beliefs anymore. I mean, I have momentary ideas that, yeah, if I do this, that this will result and stuff like that. But as for a believing about how it is, I didn't really, if you look carefully at what I've said today, I didn't really paint you a picture of how it is as an object. Because the true knowing will never yield an object. And I was trying to help you notice that. Yeah. So I don't think. I don't think in the convention. Well, I do think. I mean, I can think, but I don't rely on what I think. In the end, when it comes to really understanding what's actually taking place with this, it's not peaceful there. I catch myself here. There I am stuck again. I remember my teacher, Katagiri Roshi, he once spoke of, he said, I just changed minds. You know, he catches himself like that, and he said, it wasn't like I changed my mind. I started thinking about something else. It's like he switches to that other mind. He said, I forget exactly how he worded it now, but what are you talking about? But now I realize what he was referring to. We don't have to stay with that mind. And so I catch myself getting kind of angry or something, and as quickly as possible to realize this is nothing to get angry about. Here, it's me. It's me slipping again, not paying attention. Just come back to this. I've understood this now for a long time, but I certainly have not perfected this practice in any way whatsoever. I don't know if that's possible. Yeah, thank you. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.